This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Beatles montage for you there. Thank you, Ed.
Very interesting. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works,
the Paul Molloy Show. I am indeed Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy, Big Ed Davis, thank you very much for joining us on this Wednesday morning, December 4th already, by the way. Wow. I guess they call this the Advent season. I like the name. We're going to be talking in a few minutes with Adam White, of the American Enterprise Institute, about what constitutes high crimes and misdemeanors. You hear that phrase, don't you? It comes out of the Constitution. It has to do with impeachment. But what do those words really mean? I think you're going to find this very interesting. And speaking about that, the impeachment circus continues as intelligence Chairman Adam Schiff hands off the ringmaster reins to Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler. And the three ringer continues. We're going to have one of the great ringers of all time to the center ring to discuss all of this, Andrew the Master Barber. So stay tuned for that a little later in the show. And store owners in Oakland, California have found a very unique way now to discourage the homeless from parking out in front of their stores. They are using logs. Have you heard about that? We're going to fill you in on it. So stay tuned. And in our Freedom Works Ultimate Top 10, Ed, I don't know that I can get through this without laughing. We have the top 10 greatest verbal put-downs. And some of these, I must tell you, made me laugh out loud. So I'm going to have to constrain myself. The top 10 greatest verbal put-downs. Okay. Well, we got a lot going today. And you know it's impeachment round two day. And His Excellency Chairman Jerry Nadler is sitting on the throne to oversee the Judiciary Committee's handling now of the impeachment. The Intelligence Committee late yesterday voted to adopt and issue its report on its findings from its panel's inquiry. Now, I don't know exactly why the Intelligence Committee has anything to do with an impeachment inquiry, but does it make any difference? You would have thought the Judiciary Committee under Chairman Jerry Nadler would be charged with that responsibility. But no, they wanted a real Trump hater to oversee it. And it just so happened that Adam Schiff chairs the Intelligence Committee. So that's the way it went. So without any surprise, they voted to adopt the report on the findings, accusing Trump of misusing his office in a phone call, in one lousy phone call to the president of the Ukraine. The party line vote was 13-9. That means that there are four more Democrats on the Intelligence Committee than Republicans. The report was 300 pages. Why do they need 300 pages? You know, the longer something goes to explain it, the less accurate or the less honest it is, you know? Ever notice that? If it was something impeachable, you'd probably be able to say it very quickly in a sentence, and people would understand it. But try saying it quickly in a sentence to somebody that just landed on this planet as to why they want to throw him out of office. You'll find it's very hard to do. So here we go, and as we speak, we have the Judiciary Committee. I guess they are going to have three or four attorneys that are experts in what constitutes an impeachment. Now, that should be a lot of fun. And they wanted Republicans to bring witnesses to that. So the Republicans said, no, we're not going to bring it to that. Why? What's the point? But, you know, you knew that Adam Schiff had it in for Trump. It wouldn't have made any difference what any of the witnesses had said in his intelligence committee. None. They were going to vote straight party line. Did you notice that there is not one Republican that has come out in a 435-member House? Not one that voted for this impeachment inquiry? That's almost a... talk about no bipartisanship. Isn't that a perfect example of no bipartisanship? And didn't Nancy Pelosi say they would not proceed? They would not proceed with impeachment unless they had bipartisanship? In other words, they had at least a couple? Could we find not one Republican in the 200-plus Republicans or 190-plus Republicans or whatever it is? Not one. So there you go. Oh, by the way, this is with a deep sense of sadness that I report that Kamala Harris, Ed, bring out the tissues for a moment, please. Kamala Harris is ending her presidential campaign. And that is one less, I guess there's only, did you know there's only six left that qualify for the next debate? Six presidential candidates on the Democratic ticket that now qualify for the next debate. And we're going to talk a little bit later about that. But she basically said, you know what, I'm not getting any money, in so many words. She said, 11 months ago at the launch of our campaign, I told you all I'm not perfect, but I will always speak with decency and moral clarity and treat all people with dignity and respect. Apparently, she wasn't quite using that rule for her staff, because she got a lot of bad press about the way she treated her staff. Other than my staff, I'm going to treat all people with dignity and respect, and I will lead with integrity, she said. And here are the words that really mean something in her little speech. I've taken stock and looked at this from every angle, and over the last few days have come to one of the hardest decisions of my life. My campaign for president simply doesn't have the financial resources we need to continue. So ends Kamala. And I thought that she might be quite frankly, at the beginning, she might be a threat to Trump. I thought she might be, because I thought, well, she's got some personality. She's African-American. You know, so she had a chance, but what do I know? Okay, let's take a break. Because when we come back, I'll tell you what, we're going to find out really what is a high crime and misdemeanor.
There's a reason for the sunshine sky, and there's a reason why I'm feeling so high. Must be the season when that love light shines all around us.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's to your health and longevity.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Varshu.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune in to the show on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on a Wednesday morning. We thank you very much for joining us. And we also want to thank Adam White for coming on. And Adam, he is a resident scholar at the Great American Enterprise Institute. And he's graciously consented to come and talk to us about the term high crimes and misdemeanors and what it actually means. And AEI did indeed, with Gary Schmidt, pen a little piece on this actual meaning of the term. Adam, welcome to Freedom Works.
Well, thank you very much for your gracious invitation.
Oh, not at all. I am really interested, Adam. I'm not saying that just to be nice. I myself wondered, when I look in the Constitution, in fact, I was thumbing through it here, and I couldn't find the exact phrase here, but basically it says that the president or other people in the political process can indeed be removed for high crimes and misdemeanors. But we don't know exactly. We all argue about what that means. So I want to ask you first, and maybe this sounds like a crazy question, but when I look at high crimes and misdemeanors, does that mean to remove a president, you have to have both or just one? Do you know what I mean? It says high crimes and misdemeanors.
Well, the great challenge in trying to interpret this constitutional phrase is that there's never really been a clear, fixed definition of this, going all the way back to the time when it was written. Now, the actual term, treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors, it appears at the very, very end of Article 2 of the Constitution. That's the part focusing on the presidency. It's Article 2, Section 4. It says, the president, vice president, and all other officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Elsewhere in the Constitution, you see this extends to judges as well.
Right.
The judges have been impeached for bribery, which is obviously a crime. But one of the challenges in this broader term of high crimes and misdemeanors is that it's never really been carried through with respect to a president. We've had two presidents impeached but not removed. We've had another president, President Nixon, come very close to being impeached. But we've never really had occasion to define it with specificity. And if you go back to the founding debates, both the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia and then the Federalist Papers and elsewhere, I think it's clear, and this comes across in my colleague Gary Schmidt's paper very well, I think it's clear that the term high crimes and misdemeanors, it both extends beyond just crimes. A misdemeanor need not be just what we think of as a crime, but it can be something that isn't a crime, but at the same time, not all crimes are necessarily impeachable. If a president, say, jaywalked, it wouldn't necessarily be an impeachable offense.
No,
but as Hamilton put it very well, I think, in Federal 65, he said, the impeachment provision is for, quote, the misconduct of public men from the abuse or violation of some public trust. Elsewhere there, he writes that these offenses are political as they relate chiefly to the society itself. And so we have to look at the president's role in our government, the powers we entrust to him, and the risks of the abuse of that trust.
Right. I guess the word that really gets my interest is misdemeanors.
Yeah.
Misdemeanors to me is jaywalking.
Yeah.
You know, a misdemeanor is doing something small, where a high crime, like treason or bribery, you know, is not a misdemeanor. So
right.
But you're saying it's so interpretable that we can't really, it's like trying to catch the wind and put it in a glass. You can't really seem to grab it, can you?
Well, that's fairly true, I'd say. The danger in all this is you often hear people say high crimes and misdemeanors means whatever the Senate decides it means. That's not quite right. I mean, if presidents could be impeached just for whatever the House and the Senate wanted at a given moment, then the framers wouldn't have inserted a term like high crimes and misdemeanors into the Constitution. They would have just said, the president can be impeached, here's how. Originally, George Mason at the Constitutional Convention proposed the term maladministration. The original draft said treason, bribery. Mason said, that's not nearly enough. We need something more than treason and bribery. How about maladministration? And James Madison rebuked him and said, that term is too broad because then the Senate with the House could remove a president anytime they don't like the way he's governing. We need something more than that.
Yeah.
So they settled upon this term. The records of the debates really don't offer any indication of what precisely it means, but I would resist thinking of misdemeanors exclusively in sort of the modern legal sense. At one point, the draft of the Constitution would have read high crimes and misdemeanors against the state. We don't know why they removed those last few words. But I think when they use that term, high crimes and misdemeanors, it actually goes back into English history without much more clarity. It meant more than just crimes, whether high or low.
In fact, that was my next question, is the actual origin of the term. And as you say, you can go back. And we get the foundation of our Constitution from basically, I guess, from English law, correct, in the Magna Carta.
Yes, a great deal.
And so, therefore, we look to them. We look to them for a little bit of background in throwing out a reigning monarch, or in this case, a president. I guess the way the people looked at throwing out a reigning monarch in England before that had to be a little bit different because he had a little bit more power, though, right?
That's right. The framers at the Constitutional Convention had a very specific English example in mind. They were thinking of the then recent impeachment of Warren Hastings, an English official who was the governor of India. And Edmund Burke led the effort to impeach him for his really sort of rampant misrule and abusive rule of India. It went beyond just any sorts of crimes. In fact, that was one of Mason's warnings that we shouldn't limit impeachment to just treason or bribery, because he singled out Hastings. And he said, treason, as it's defined in the Constitution, will not reach many great and dangerous offenses. Hastings is not guilty of treason. So they had in mind this sort of truly abusive misuse of the office, dereliction of the duties of the office, but without limiting it to crimes. And again, the challenge is that we can't sort of say, well, that makes it just totally open-ended. The Senate and the House can define it however they want. It requires sort of a higher constitutional debate. It'll be very interesting. I heard you lead off the segment by mentioning today's hearings. It will be interesting to see what these constitutional scholars make of this. My guess is that the witnesses called by the Democrats are going to try to over-legalize this. What I mean is they'll try to lawyer it up. They'll try to make it very hyper-technical, focusing on the term bribery, when I think the American public as a whole ought to think more broadly about the powers of the office, its role in our government, and what it means to use and carry out the public trust in a way that's truly faithful to the people.
We're talking with Adam White. He is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute and AEI, with Gary Schmidt, penned a piece called What Does High Crimes and Misdemeanors Mean? And, of course, we're taking it in the context of whether or not a president in this case has done it. And speaking of presidents that were impeached, as you did, Adam, Andrew Johnson was impeached. Mm-hmm. I believe he followed Lincoln. I don't remember for sure. But was he not the president that followed, that actually took the office after Lincoln was assassinated?
That's right. He succeeded Lincoln, and he was impeached, although not ultimately removed by the Senate, for just defying a number of laws that the Republicans, who were very skeptical of Johnson, put into place to try to retain Lincoln's cabinet as a check on President Johnson.
Yes, he was a Southerner. He was from Tennessee, I believe. So I guess they suspected he might have some treasonous elements in doing that. Is that what it was?
No, it wasn't quite that. Johnson, as you mentioned, he was a Southerner. Lincoln put him on the ticket in 1864 as sort of an effort of national unity. Of course, when Lincoln died and suddenly Johnson found himself president, it changed the dynamic. He was a Republican, and he was obviously against Southern secession, but he did not prosecute the Reconstruction to the satisfaction of the group we now call the Radical Republicans, the very energetic, sort of pro-Lincoln, even more sort of aggressive than Lincoln Republicans. Congress, in order to put a check on President Johnson from going too easy on the South, passed laws that limited his ability to remove the members of the cabinet that he had inherited from President Lincoln. Johnson defied those laws, and that's primarily what he was impeached for.
Okay. Now, so, I mean, when most people look back, they don't know exactly what it was, and I'm thinking that in another 100 years or whatever, 150 years, when people look back on this, and assuming that there is an impeachment vote, that people will not be able to describe the reason to throw out the president in like one easy sentence. And I think this is what makes it so difficult. Even now, if you were to approach people on the street, they can't verbalize the exact impeachable event, in my opinion. I want to get your thoughts on how murky this is.
I think the way you're framing it is exactly right, that ultimately the real judges of impeachment, what it means, what it ought to mean, it's the judgment of history. It's the judgment of not just the immediate political circumstances. And in fact, Hamilton said elsewhere in the Federalist Papers that impeachment would really just exacerbate whatever political divisions already exist in a society at a given moment in time. Ultimately, the real judgment has to come from the eyes of history. And I do think a real danger of what the Democrats are trying to accomplish here, a danger to their own interests, is that they haven't really spelled out with clear specificity exactly what they are impeaching President Trump for with an eye to history. Right now we have, and this report just came out yesterday, I haven't gotten a chance to go through it with a fine-tooth comb, but I've watched things pretty closely. The Democrats have definitely raised some very worrisome allegations against the president. But throughout, it was, even in those hearings, it wasn't clear, were they complaining primarily because the president was, in their eyes, mismanaging Ukraine policy? That was what the first day or two of testimony sure sounded like. Was it about bribery? Was it about a quid pro quo? Can they really prove what President Trump's intent was based on the testimony of these officials who were all about two steps removed from the president? To me, the real danger was that they wrapped up the House Intelligence Committee hearing so quickly on such an artificial timeline that they are really going to undermine their own ability in the long run to explain to future generations precisely what they were impeaching President Trump for.
Yeah, it looks purely political. And they, I think a lot of people, you know, my own opinion, I do not think he should be impeached, but I think he did. Indeed, say to the president of Ukraine that he was hoping that they might investigate something which, on its surface, did look corrupt. It just so happened that the person involved in the corruption was also running against him.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that it can't be both. And
that's
where it gets murky. I mean, can't he ask them? And then we have apparently an agreement that we signed with Ukraine, which involved investigating any kind of problems in that country because we knew of its history. Do we not have an agreement with Ukraine on that?
I'm not sure.
I think we do.
Your point, you really get to the crux of the point. I've already said, and I'll say it again, if it can be shown that President Trump or any president specifically and intentionally leveraged U.S. you know, resources, especially aid or military aid, in order to get foreign influence against his political opponents, I think that would be impeachable because it would go to the heart of our electoral process. But the problem is here that President Trump has, and is his and people who have argued on his behalf have identified the fact that there are multiple motivations that could be at issue here. And it's not clear to me that Democrats have proven sufficiently that President Trump really was working from the really impeachable motivations rather than focusing on corruption. I'd say his supporters haven't really made the case that he was definitely working just to root out corruption. But, of course, here the burden is on the House to prove its case, and prove its case both to the Senate and in the court of public opinion.
Yeah, it comes down to, from what I see, there is really no smoking gun. There is no aha. You know, here it is. You know, and you open it up, and there it is, shiny and bright, and everybody can see it. Nobody can see it. Nobody can see it. It's still wrapped. And this is where I think the thing starts to dissipate. Because if you think about it, every president in a phone call to other foreign leaders, when it involves the United States and helping them one way or the other, you got to admit, there's quid pro quos all over the place. And I don't care what anybody says. It's just the way life is. It's just the way.
Sure, and every way that a president executes his office, especially when he faces the opportunity for re-election, everything that he does ideally will redound to his political benefit because he's making a case ultimately to the American people to re-elect him on his record. So I think that there's a danger in defining this too broadly. For me, it really is the very narrow case of a president, not just this president or any president, using specific U.S. assets to encourage an investigation of a specific political opponent. And that's, for me, the fact that it is the Biden family raises real red flags for me, and I think the Democrats need to spend more time trying to prove out this case through further hearings.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. Adam, it was a real pleasure talking with you. I hope we can talk again maybe down the road, maybe in the after effects. So thank you.
I would love to, and I just want to point out that this great paper that my colleague Gary and my friend Joe Bissette authored, this originally, an earlier version of this, was written for the Clinton impeachment in 1999.
Wow.
And they've updated it and published it formally now. It just is a good reminder that these questions truly are timeless.
Indeed they are, Adam. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
All right. There he is, Adam White, American Enterprise Institute. Let us take a break, and when we come back, we'll get to the current impeachment imbroglio and talk with the ringmaster of, what would we call it, American thoughts and opinions, Andrew the Master Barber.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Don't miss the Craft Beer Hour every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. We'll bring you up to speed on craft beer events and festivals, local breweries, and interview the brains behind the brews. So grab a pint and listen to the Craft Beer Hour every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network, and visit the website, thecraftbeerhour.com.
Let's Go Bowling, heard on the Tantalk Radio Network every Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 12 Eastern Time, sponsored by 12 Strike and Innovative Ball Spinner. If you bowl, if you haven't bowled in a while, or if you never bowled, why not you be one of 65 million people have bowled last year? Listen to the tip of the week, bowling stars old and new, Let's Go Bowling Show, gobowlingshow.com.
Go yard is a metaphor used in baseball, meaning to hit a home run. Life struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back. And I guess the impeachment hearings under the auspices of Jerry Nadler and the Judiciary Committee are off and running. And they're going to have these so-called constitutional experts on. I think they got four of them. Three of them are going to tell you that whatever they're doing right now makes good sense. And one of them is going to tell you, not so fast. Anyway, we have a fifth constitutional expert here with us, Andrew the Master Barber. Andrew, how are you?
Paul, I'm doing great. How you doing, buddy?
We're doing good here. We're trying to figure out what a high crime and a misdemeanor is. And we just had an expert from the American Enterprise Institute try to define it. But I tell you what, it's still kind of smoke and mirrors, and it's whatever the Democrats or the party that controls the House, apparently, whatever they want it to be.
That's it, Paul. By the way, the facts are they're going nowhere. They're getting really, really nervous now. They have to do something. I still don't think they're going to take a vote.
I don't think so either. I agree with
okay?
you.
I don't think they're going to take a vote. They're getting very nervous because this IG report's coming out, next
Monday.
Tuesday or something?
Monday the 9th.
And,
yeah.
Okay. Now, do you remember when I said there's going to be the lower echelon of people that are going to go down first?
Yes, you did.
I said Lisa Page, Peter Stroke, Andrew McCabe, Bill Orr, and his wife Nellie, right?
Yes.
Now, did you notice Lisa Page is coming out of the woodwork already?
Yes. I have noticed it. Yes.
All right, this is starting to fall, just like I said it's going to. Now, I don't expect too much out of this IG report, to be honest with you, but it's shaking them up, okay? And Lisa Page already, she says that Trump has crucified her. What did Trump do? She's playing the victim all of a sudden.
Yeah, all you have to do is read the emails. I mean, just read the emails. You don't even need to comment on them, and she hoists herself on her own petard, as they say.
Well, this whole impeachment thing is falling apart. They know it. They've got nothing. I read the 9 so-called articles yesterday. They have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, nothing impeachable whatsoever. And like I say, they're getting very nervous. They're not going to have a vote. I mean, where's it going to end up now?
I know. In fact, Nancy Pelosi has come out to say they don't think they would take a vote if they do until after Christmas. And I'm thinking, you know what? That's an awful bad time to take a vote, especially during that period, let's say, between Christmas and mid-January. People are still in a holiday spirit. They don't want to hear about their president being dangled out to be thrown out of office.
No, Paul, they're just making it a landslide for Trump more and more. And I think once the Durham report comes out, it's going to fall in place, just like I said. You know, they're already running scared. When Lisa Page starts speaking, she's the bottom one. Her and Stroke, they're at the bottom of the list. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do know what you're saying.
And they are not going to go down as the fall people.
Yeah. It's such a, what do you call it, a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive.
It's all corruption, Paul.
Yeah.
It's all corruption, and it's coming out little bits at a time, you know? The other 50% of the people that don't want to believe this stuff, if it all hammered them one time, they're going to go nuts. But they're being fed little pieces at a time. Look at the UN yesterday. Did you see, I guess, in the palace when they all met yesterday, Merkel and the little guy there from Canada, they were in Macron over there.
Little guy from Canada, he's pretty tall. He's about 6 foot.
To me, he's a peanut.
He's a peanut, okay. Well, yes, okay. In fact, I got it right in front of me. They started making it's like when you get in a corner after some...
That's right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? They were acting like school kids in a corner. Did you hear what Trump did? It's like he's the teacher and they're the kids. That's the way I looked at it.
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, look at the money we were putting into NATO, $637 billion. England puts in $55 billion, Germany at 27, I mean, come on. What's with this deal?
Well, I'll tell you the truth, though. After I read the article, I thought, you know what? I don't blame them at all for sitting in a corner and saying whatever they want. I blame the people that taped it and then published it, because all of us talk behind teacher's back, behind daddy's back, behind mommy's back. We all say things, and we're all human, and I don't think what they said was that bad. I don't. But then when they publish it, they publish it to make Donald Trump look bad. So the intent of taping and publishing that is what I blame.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's not Trump that's going to look bad at it, because I sat there and people sat there and I talked to laughed at it. They said, look at these people. He's taking away their candy and they're all upset about it.
Well, possibly. I think he is. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's no question about it. And they're going to pay that $637 billion no more.
Yeah. Angela Merkel and all of these other countries, they're starting to, they have to pony up. And in the long run, I think Americans want that. They want to see fairness. If we're going to be in NATO, because we're the only country in NATO that isn't in Europe,
we're over here, and yet
we're putting the most. We're throwing the most money into the pot.
That's right. And for what? Absolutely not. Not only are we paying for NATO, we're still paying to protect Germany, Japan. Right.
Yeah. Exactly right.
I mean, look at the money we're putting out.
Everybody is so used to the handouts that they are getting, including, by the way, Ukraine. Why are we giving them all that money, too?
That's right. We're protecting them from Russia. Who cares?
Yeah.
let's face it. They're all torn from the same cloth, right?
If you
think about it.
Now,
they're all torn from the same cloth. They're just different sections, like Italy. You got all your different provinces, but it's all Italy, isn't it?
It is, hopefully.
And it's just like our country. You got your different states, but we're still the United States.
We are indeed.
And here we are protecting all these people, wasting all this money. You know, this is why Washington is despising Trump. He took away their candy.
Yeah.
He's taking their candy away, and they can't deal with it.
He has managed, let's be honest, with his prickly personality and his pursuit of what he thinks is right. He has managed to unnerve the entire District of Columbia. We have to admit
that's
it.
Right.
We have to admit that.
And the sad thing is, he's right in what he's doing.
Yeah. No, he is right.
He said he was going to drain the swamp, didn't he?
He did.
That was part of his deal when he was going to run elected.
I think instead of draining the swamp, Andrew, he's throwing bleach over the swamp. He's trying to purify this one. I want to take you very quickly, if I might, to something that I know has made you feel, I'm sure you got a lot of heartburn out of it, and that is that Kamala Harris has announced that she's ending her campaign. I knew you felt bad about that because you had a soft spot in your heart for the former attorney general in California. I just want to get your thoughts on that.
That was something, huh?
So what do you think? What do you think? I mean, at one point, I really thought
she couldn't raise enough money.
The money ran out.
The money ran out. That's what happened.
Did you know there are only six presidential candidates left that qualify for the next debate?
That's right.
Only six.
And then, you know what? The whole thing's not going to matter because all that money they're putting into it, I really believe they're wasting, because I'm telling you, Michelle Obama's going to come riding up on that white horse.
You are still on that one, huh?
Yes,
Obama.
I am.
You're tempting me to make another bet with you, but I'm not going to because I lost the
first one. First of all, I don't understand what makes an ex-president's wife capable of being a president, what these people are all seeing. But I'm telling you. Hillary says they're begging her, but we know that's not true. But
the only one begging her is looking back in the mirror at her. That's the only one begging her.
That's it. Hey, through all these hearings now with Nader sitting on the chair up there, you think they're going to pay back those videos from 1998 there with Bill Clinton?
Exactly. Now, isn't that the ultimate hypocrisy? You go back at not only him. Nancy Pelosi back then, she was there too.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. If I was a Republican, I'd be playing those videos right there.
It's exactly. And I think they will. I believe that they're going to be playing those videos in their campaign commercials. Absolutely
sure.
Right. On a personal note, Andrew, I know you got a little soreness in your back. I'm hoping that you're going to be able to take care of that.
Yep. I'm going to go for some surgery, Paul, on the 17th. And hopefully the doctor with the miracle hands is going to take care of this.
Well, if anybody deserves to have that kind of success, it's you, because you're a great guy, and we always appreciate your being on here. And I know you'll continue to be on even while you're recuperating, so we appreciate that as well, my
you
friend.
Got, you know, my brother Angelo even tried to take that away from me. He goes, you know, while you're in the hospital, if you want me to do the show for you, Angelo, I'll be fine. Don't you worry about a thing, brother.
I think that we're going to help you heal even quicker, because you want to stay talking on the show with us, and we love you.
You got it, Paul.
All right, my friend. I'll see you a little later today.
You got it, my friend. Right. Have a good day.
You Bye-bye. Too. There he is. Bad back and all. Andrew the Master Barber. Doggone, you got to love him. Okay, let's take our final break. Boy, I can't wait when we come back. Among other things, the top 10 greatest verbal put-downs.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio, heard every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food & Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com. My bridge is all...
Hey, everybody, this is Pastor Marcia McAllister from Beacon of Hope Ministries. We want you to join us on Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock on this radio station for our two-hour show, talking to you about the Word of God, giving you great contemporary music, some lively chat, and just some food for thought. You'll be encouraged to know how very much God loves you and how He has a plan for your life. Join us this coming Sunday at 3 o'clock on Living the Good Life.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Just let me hear some of that rock and roll music. Any old way you choose it. Got a backbeat.
We are back. And I got to be honest, I was just reading a couple of these put-downs we're about to talk about, and I'm still laughing. So I may have to have you help me in delivering them. But right now, before we do that, we want to go out to Oakland because they have a very unique way of, let's say, stopping homeless people from sitting down in front of their establishment. Somebody in Oakland has been taking matters into their own hands by placing car-sized logs in front of the stores in an effort to stop transients from setting up camp. Now, while the motive is clear, nobody is taking any responsibility for putting the logs there. City officials have complained that the logs have blocked their city crews from doing cleanup, you know, on the streets and the like, and the sidewalks, but admit that they have done little to root out the culprit. One of the council members said she reached out to local business owners where all these logs are being put, but nobody was fessing up. A spokesman for the Public Works Department in Oakland said he considers the logs an intentional obstruction of the public right-of-way. Well, sure it is, but isn't homeless tents also a little bit of an obstruction of the public's right-of-way when you're trying to walk down the doggone sidewalk and you got to step over tents and human beings laying there? I mean, which is worse? At least the logs, if you accidentally step on the log, nobody's going to go, ouch. Now, one of the storefront people said he doesn't have a problem with the logs, blames the city for not addressing the homeless situation. You know, you got the homeless situation in San Francisco, Oakland, Seattle, Los Angeles, and Portland. Why are they mainly out there? Why are they all out there? Well, one of the reasons is because they've got such a crazy, with all due respect, Democratic city councils allowing all of this nonsense to, and then throwing all of this money towards it and having it not do any good but increase the population of the homeless. That's what's going on. So anyway, just think about logs in case you're running a store out there and you're getting too many people setting up tents in front of your place. Roll out the log, and that'll help do it. All right. Now, one other thing I wanted to talk about has to do with Google. And this, I found this story very interesting. Google's co-founders are leaving. Did you know that? They're relinquishing their executive positions, just as regulators are taking an interest in possible abuse of the privacy practices and their marketing power. So they're leaving, or stepping down probably would be a better way of saying it. Their successor, Sundar Pichai, I guess, or Pichai, is carrying on. But the two co-founders, Larry Page and Sergey Brin, they were CEO and president, respectively. They are stepping down of the Google parent company, Alphabet. And it caps more than two decades during which they have shepherded, you know, they're kind of like Bill Gates. They started in their garage in the Silicon Valley with this whole concept of Google. And wow, it's almost like, maybe it's just as successful, I guess, in its own way as Bill Gates and Microsoft. What they're facing, Google, is increasing pressure and criticism from authorities about their privacy policies and the nature of their many-legged businesses. So, you know, they've also been accused of being so political that if you write something up like Trump, that you'll get all of these negative things that will come up. If you write, if you had written something, and we're going to go back to before the election, if you had written something like Hillary Clinton, and then hit the enter button or whatever on your computer, all of these positive stories would come up. And so there was a question of whether or not they were actually putting their thumb on the scale of the information that would become available to you. So there's all kinds of things. There's politics, and there's you know, their finances, and you know, just a host of things. But you know, this is, once again, I must say, this is the federal government, or the government trying to become involved in the private sector. You know, if you've got a new product out there, and you created it. I mean, you kind of set the rules. And if people don't want to purchase the product because they don't like what you're doing, they have a right not to purchase it. That, to me, is the greatest form of censorship of something that you don't like. Don't buy it. Don't be part of it if you don't like it. And there's a free speech issue, too, right? I mean, as much as I would like Google to say good things about the people I like when I write, when I type in somebody's name, it may be that they don't, but that's... In a way, that's kind of their prerogative. It's their free speech in their own way. Indeed, if they have, you know, taken a political or a personal position on somebody. So there you go. Okay, Ed, we have a good one. When you get over on the drums here, you're going to have to buckle in because you might laugh so hard, too, that you might fall off a little drum stool. We don't want that. But these are... I mean, let's be honest, as far as put-downs go, who's to say what are the top 10 greatest put-downs? But this is what top10best.com claims are the greatest put-downs. And I have to admit, and you're going to have to be our censor, but a couple of them are kind of close to the line. Is that going to be okay with you?
Yeah, yep.
All right, you sure?
Yep.
Okay, here we go. Get ready. Top 10 greatest put-downs. Number 10. You're like a Happy Meal without the prize. You like that one? Well, you're not laughing.
You like a Happy Meal without the prize.
Yeah, you're like a Happy Meal without the prize.
I don't get it.
There's nothing left after a Happy Meal if you don't have the prize. It's like it's like eating the spinach and then you don't get the whistle or whatever.
Okay.
The prize. All right. Number 9. Calling you an idiot would be an insult to stupid people.
Okay.
Do you like it?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll keep that one, right? Number 8. You ever wonder what life would be like if you had enough oxygen at birth?
Okay.
What do you think?
It's all right.
It's all right. You're not laughing.
Well.
That's all right. That's you. That's you. Number 7. You think you're hot snot on a platter, but you're just a cold booger on a paper plate. I don't like, that's kind of, you're not laughing at that.
That's a booger joke. All right.
All right. Number 6. Can I borrow your face for a few days while my ass is on vacation? What do you think?
Well, that goes back to the one of that joke about, you know, your face looks like my butt.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Okay.
Kind of roundabout way.
I was going to use butt, but it's
kind of
funnier. Yeah. Well, that word has come into radio usage and even TV usage.
Give me a break.
All right. Number 5. You're as useless as rubber lips on a woodpecker.
Okay.
What do you think?
Okay.
You have to think about that one for a bit, don't you? You
Do.
Okay.
Yep.
Number 4. We all spring from apes, but you didn't spring far enough.
We all spring for what?
From apes.
Okay.
We all spring from apes, but you didn't spring far enough.
Well, you have to be careful who you say that to.
I know, but it's kind of funny.
Okay.
I thought. Number 3. How many times do I have to flush to get rid of you?
That's all right.
Now, you almost laughed that
time.
That's
all right.
You almost laughed that time. Number 2. Can I borrow your head for my rock garden? Well, you almost laughed at that one.
It's all right.
All right, Ed, normally I ask you to give me the number 1, but there's no way. I mean, there's a 3 million put down line, so I'm not even going to trouble you for that, but I want to see how quickly you pick up on this one.
Okay.
All right. So you want to do a drum roll for the number 1 greatest put down. I see you suffer from rectal cranium inversion.
Okay.
There we go. Did you pick up on it right away?
Yeah.
All right.
Imus used to have some good ones. His best one was, I see you're stuck on stupid.
Who said that one?
Imus, for years. I think he actually coined that phrase.
Yeah. Hey, that's kind of cute.
You're stuck on stupid.
Now, you know what? It's funny. This goes to the heart of laughter. We have a few extra seconds here. I have learned that it depends on sometimes the time of day or how you are feeling when one thing makes you laugh like crazy and the same thing in the morning doesn't make you laugh at all.
Mm-hmm.
Ever notice that?
Yeah.
You have to be in a certain mood.
Yep.
Now, I was laughing like crazy at some of these, and it was at night. Maybe I was a little tired. Some of them aren't quite as funny, but they still were pretty good. You got to give them some credit. All right, my friends.
Another good one was crazy would call you crazy.
Crazy would call you crazy. Crazy would call you crazy.
Stuff like that.
Okay, very good, very good. Well, want to thank you all for being with us, and I want to remind you that you got to stay tuned for the Craft Beer Hour with Kenny and Bill right after this program. They're going to talk about all things liquor, and I like that kind of talk. So thanks so much. Remember this, freedom works.